We'll jump back in, but we're back. We're back to
Woohoo!
recording. We're
Just
here.
we ha yeah we've survived lots of things in the last couple months.
Yeah. And this episode we decided to really talk about the job hunt and pandemics and sort of maybe the field as like a total, but we were in the middle of talking about lone ranger, lone librarian type situations, and we're just gonna jump back into that and then we'll move on to those other things. But
Yeah, well, should we give some life updates too for inquiring minds, just like little ones?
sure.
I'll go first. I'm sure I had the job started in October, but the
You
school
can
years are,
remind us all what you did.
yeah, no, I got a job as a school librarian at a private school that serves ages 2 through 8th grade, and I teach kindergarten through 4th grade classes, and the year's gone well, and we were talking about like library arrangement and things like that, but I really actually like the job, and I'm excited about next year being a little more normal. I'm going to get my space back. The library will no longer be a classroom. The kids will come to the library, so that's going to change. Every lesson I did this year is like not as usable because now that's going to change. I'm going to be able to teach like more library skills and stuff, but I'm really excited to have the space and like I have lots of plans for it. And I have a pretty good budget, and the smart board in the library was like due to be replaced last year, and then they like made it work this year, the teachers that were using that room. And then I was like, I have a lot of money left in my budget. Let's buy a new smart board for the library. So like 3 or 4 people were like, well, you have to like get approval. And so I like really advocated for it. And then like the principal went into that classroom to like do the project with the kids, and she saw what the smart board was like. And so then they were like, well, you're approved. It's my budget. I might as well use the money. So I am really proud of myself. I advocated and I like bought a major piece of technology for my library.
Yeah, but the thing about you too is because we've done this so many times, we've gone to used bookstores and stuff. You try to hunt down whatever you can that way to save money because, worst case scenario, if something happens to a book, then you're like, hey, the book was used at the beginning. Don't worry about it. It's just a book. Because I know as a child, I was very anxious. And especially if it's something like school like that, you're super freaked out about it. And I just think that you're such a responsible budget person that it's you'll do great managing the budget, and it's great you could get something big like this.
Yeah, no, I'm happy, and I think everyone's very happy with me and everything I've done so far. So I'm feeling good. How about you? You have a new job.
Yes, I have somehow found myself as a law librarian, which is a weird change of pace for someone with a very strong archives background. But there it is. And they like me, and my boss is always commenting because I've already identified 3 or 4 contracts. I'm like, oh, we don't need this. We can just cancel this. Let's save thousands of dollars. We don't need this. And she's just like, you keep just find it. You just keep getting rid of things. And I'm just like, it's the luxury of having that new perspective of being like, we don't need this.
Yeah.
So I don't need this. And I would rather have that money sitting there as a pool, because we don't have access to ProQuest or an article database or something like that. So if I want that sort of thing, if the attorneys want that sort of thing, I have to buy it. And
Yeah.
so I would much rather have a larger floating budget than use resources that we don't need anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then the biggest thing that's of my job that's really weird is we're getting rid of our physical library in both places. And so now I get to basically try to donate as many books as possible, which is surprisingly really challenging. And there's a bunch of archival material. Unfortunately, I've gotten a lot of people who are like, yes, we'll take it, we'd love it. And that's really nice. But it is sort of disheartening to know that these books are all basically going to get recycled because I can't find a home for them. So
yeah, well, because they, what are they using, Westlaw or whatever yeah. law, yeah, to look things up. So they're really not looking at physical books anymore.
Well, and it's hard because you'd think, like, and this is something I don't quite understand yet and something I need to look into more, is you'd think that, like, the prison libraries, who probably don't have that many resources maybe, would be open to, like, accepting things, but they have, like, really, really strict donation guidelines. And it's like, why? Like, if I can offer you all of these books that are free to you, like, yeah. why is it so hard to, like, do this?
It must be, well, because we don't treat prisoners like people in this country. And why would we want to give them resources to maybe make a better claim and get out of jail? But yeah, you'd think they'd want, like the law books. And
yeah, I mean, I definitely get some of the other resources, like the more general, like Federal Reporters and like Supreme Court cases and stuff, which they probably also have online databases. But like, yeah, the more specific things, it's like, why not?
Yeah.
So it's something I have to do a lot more digging on. But like, I'm part of what I'm doing too is like, we've got books dating back to like old books, like dating back to like 1803. And I was like, maybe these should come to my house. But like,
but yeah, if there's like any libraries or archives around that would want those, that maybe have a gap in their collection or something.
Yeah, I mean, I would also say the hard thing too is that so far I haven't really found like a board where I can just post it on.
Yeah.
It's all I have to email or call everybody individually.
There's no law librarian association like through the ALA or anything like that?
There's a law librarian board, but that's not really the people I'm trying to get. I would say is like I'm looking more like I contacted like the state of Michigan's law library and they were like, we would be interested in more of the historic books, and that's great, like that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah,
but like there's no like law libraries for the most part aren't looking to add to their collections.
Yeah, that makes
it's sense. Just the unfortunate reality of the kind of work we do. If you're not at a university, you're yeah. not really adding books.
Yeah, and I know my Marissa, friend of the podcast, I was just talking to her and she was talking about like she never really used the law library because anytime she looked anything up it was like with Westlaw, and then the only time was when they were publishing their law journal for citations, if people cited other articles or cited things, that's when she would go to the library to like pull books and check citations. But that was the only time. And I would imagine, you know, your lawyers might at your firm might be publishing articles here and there, but like for the most part can probably still find most of their stuff online.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's something, you know, because I'm only like barely a month in. Yeah. I don't know that we do that much publication. I think it's more litigation.
Right. But if any of them were to write a law article or something for some journal or something, they I would think they would make use of their library at their firm, or, you know.
The hard part is like, I don't know how familiar you are with Westlaw. I'm going to assume not at all.
Or like, well, I mean, I did it with my paralegal certificate.
Okay, yeah. So, like, it's, I mean, and I used it during my undergrad, but it's gotten way better to the point that, like, there's, like, subject areas. So, if you're writing an article on something that's associated to the Affordable Care Act, and, like, I'm working on, like, you know, I've gotten asked questions about this before, is it's just, like, Westlaw pulls together information and, like, summarizes it way better than I ever could. And if yeah. I'm sending you anything, it would just be a copy and pasted thing from Westlaw. Mm. So, like, part of me is just sending links back to Westlaw because it's, like, they already pulled in all the summaries. They already pulled in all the cases and similar statutes you should look at. They broke it down by specific issues of the law. There is nothing I can do here that has not already been done by Westlaw. It's okay. Just the reality.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking more of like context stuff. If they had like, you know, sometimes when they write law articles, especially for like a journal, they'll like, it won't just be law that they talk about, but they talk, you know, just like when we write papers, you know, context things about just other, a lot of times there's like a lot of history and a lot of people who are lawyers really like history. So they'll like cite other things.
That's the problem, is they even have like historic notes and it's like,
yeah,
just whatever. But it's like, it's really great because it saves me time and stuff, but it's also like, it's just making the physical library so obsolete and it hurts my heart. But that's,
no, that's hard. Yeah. Marissa was saying too, like, she loved the law librarians at the law schools, and they have to have like law degrees to work in those positions. And they were always like, let us know if you need help finding anything. And they were the students were like just using Westlaw and everything. And then she's like, I took the advanced research classes, which were taught by the law school librarians. But like after that, I don't really need to ask them anything because they taught me how to do all the stuff.
I definitely think that that's true. And, you know, we said this at CNN all the time, but it's surprising how many things you get asked for that you just have to Google.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like, you know, I know for a fact that that's one of the reasons that I got hired is because I did a year at CNN and it's so similar to that. Mm. But I think part of it is like Marissa was like saying, is it's just knowing how to do the research, which makes all the difference. And it's that level of efficiency that you either take in an advanced research class like that or from, you know, doing your MLIS, that it's like knowing how to use the database. And that's part of, I think, why they picked me, is like because I'm very digitally savvy and I'm well aware of like, you know, different things that are coming up. And I think that all of those things are what's going to make the difference, especially as we enter this post-COVID, we're still all working somewhat virtually world.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. What else did we want to talk about? I forget. Allie always has her notes. She's always so prepared, and I'm so laissez-faire.
The depressing world of job hunts.
Oh, yeah. We were going to talk about kind of looking for jobs and how that works and stuff.
And our recommendations and heartbreaks and
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah, we both went through it like during COVID, but kind of at different times in it. So for me, I like finished the MLIS and my internship was, which was ostensibly my job, at the same time, right as COVID was really breaking or had broken in what, late March. And then I finished in May. And I just started applying all over the place. And I've talked about this, like across the whole country. And then, well, for a little while I wasn't. And then I was like, okay, now I really got to find a job. I was just willing to apply anywhere. And like, because I did the archival stuff, I was applying at archives. I was applying at public libraries. I was applying at like universities, major places. Some places I knew were not going to, you know, give me a call back. And then I got calls. Then I got interviews at places I was surprised I got interviews at. So that made me happy. But then like, you're like impressed with yourself for a minute. You're like, oh, I'm the kind of person that like possibly detriment to myself, but like I'll apply for things that I think I can't get and then maybe get to a certain point, which is a good thing to do because like, you don't know necessarily what they're looking for. So, and you're your harshest critic. So, you know, I recommend to people, if you think you can't get that job, still apply for it. Unless they're like, oh, we need 50 years of experience, like, and you just graduated, you know, maybe, you know, that one's a little much.
Honestly, like, you know, this is, they've done this scientific study where like, if a woman has like 90% of the qualifications, yeah, she will not apply. But if a man has 75%, he'll apply.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So yeah, no, I was just applying all over the place and then I would get interviews. And that was, I think getting the interviews in a situation like that, where you're applying everywhere, was more stressful than not hearing. Cause if I had had a job and like I was applying just while I had a job and I wasn't hearing from people, that'd be stressful. Cause I was trying to like leave a place. But it was the hearing back from places and having then have an interview or having a second interview was more stressful than like never hearing from a place. Cause then I could just be like, okay, whatever. Or like, you'd just like wait forever and think you weren't going to hear anything. And then out of the blue, they would all come at once. And you were like, suddenly I would have like 3 interviews in a week. And that was like crazy. And then in the pandemic and stuff, like doing everything over Zoom, like we are right now, was like not easy. That was stressful, trying to like find a place to set up where like the background looks good and I can look good on camera, but yeah. And like, you can't hear the outside noise from the rest of the house. And like, that was stressful, but really getting the job I got happened after I stopped looking. And I was like, okay, this is too hard to find a job right now. I have this part-time job that doesn't pay well, but I'm living at home. I'm just going to like coast for a couple months and I'll start applying in January 2021. That was my plan. And then out of the blue, they found me because I'd put my resume on a website.
Say the website. Your resume.
The National Association of Independent Schools, which I had
what
learned
did they
about.
Do?
They, I had learned about them at the American Historical Association conference because I went to a terminal master's degree panel. So like different people that had different jobs in different places and they had masters. They did not have PhDs. Now, some of the people on the panel, I think maybe were going to go on to a PhD or whatever, but it was a nice panel that they had because I don't think there's enough resources for people who have a master's degree. In a slightly like academic-y field. And so I went to that panel and there was a woman on there and she was like, I teach, you know, social studies history at this private school. And she was in New York, I think. And she was like, and the way I found it was I put my resume on this organization's website. And because private schools will hire people that don't have teaching certificates, they want professionals, they want advanced degrees. And they might ask you to get certified while you're like, my school asked me to get certified. So I'm working for it. I'll be a certified teacher in the state of Michigan by the end of 3 years. Again, they paid for everything. It's just some extra work that I wasn't anticipating, but it should be going all right. Once the summer hits, I'll just do a lot of homework over the summer. And you know, yeah, I couldn't be happier. They offer, and then the school found me, they interviewed me. I feel like they probably didn't interview anyone else, but I don't know that. So who knows? But, and then they offered me a salary $2,000 above what I listed on the website that I wanted.
You know, honestly, they might have just interviewed you like only you, or it might have just been that you had all the things they were already looking for.
Yeah.
Because when I interviewed for like my current job, like I interviewed like on a Friday afternoon and they were like, okay, well, we'll let you know like early next week. And like, she like called me back like late on like Friday, like even it was like 4, 5 o'clock. And I was like, okay, well, she's just calling to let me know that it's not me. They don't want me. They want somebody else. And then like, she was like, oh no, we want to hire you. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? What did you say? Could you, what? And then they offered me.
Yeah.
And, but like, I think for any of our listeners, like, you know, because who have MAs in history, who are working on PhDs in history, who want to teach, definitely look at this resource. Because when I was in the midst of job hunting, I looked at this resource and there was so many teaching jobs available.
Yeah.
And like, it's exactly like Ray went down, you know, the librarian path because she has her MLIS. But there's those types of jobs and there's so many social studies history teaching jobs that if you're interested in this and you're not, you know, you're not having any luck on the tenure academic job market, try this, because the reality is teaching is still teaching.
Right.
And you're going to learn those skills at a middle school, at a private high school that will be applicable joining a community college or a university.
Yeah, definitely. And the people that like the professors we had that we really looked up to were like the ones that were also really great teachers. And I don't think there's any better education you could have if you are like Allie said, if you're struggling in those tenure track things and all that, that rat race of that is like not working out, you couldn't get a better trial by fire than walking into a classroom of, you know, kids. And if you've got, and you do that for two or three, you get the job, you get some good mentor teachers around you and stuff like that. People you can rely on. You learn to make the syllabus, you learn to make sub plans, you learn to make all that, do all that stuff. 2-3 years, you've got a lot of teaching under your belt. Maybe you get a certification along the way, depends on, you know, where you're at, what your school wants or whatever, but you put that on a resume for any university, they're going to say, well, this person's coming in, you know, two PhDs sitting next to each other. Okay. This person taught a little bit of college while they were a PhD candidate and they have a good research paper. Oh, but this person taught while they were a PhD candidate, has a good research, you know, maybe work on publishing your thesis or whatever. And then you went on to teach for 3 or 4 years. You look at a high school or whatever, I think you look better on paper than the person who has minimal teaching experience. And you can handle a classroom, like a real class, not a college classroom, but you can handle a real classroom with like lots of stuff going on at a school and everything. Then yeah, I think that's, as a person that would hire someone, if I was in that position, I would be more impressed with the person that like went out and got the job and was like, okay, this is, I want to teach, I want to be a teacher, you know, and I'm going to do this. And now I want to teach at a university level.
I agree. And I mean, I think that that's something the Biden administration has indicated is a priority, is community college education. And I could easily see a community college giving preference to someone who's taught at a private high school for several years instead of someone who TA'd for a year at a university, because the person who taught at the private high school for years already knows how to do all of the things Ray just said. And that's going to be the valuable experience that they're like, we want teachers. While academics is important, it's not what a community college is for. It's not right there to facilitate your research. It's there to teach.
Yeah. So if that's a passion of yours, and the reason we're saying private school is because they will hire people that are not certified teachers. They, again, like I said, for me, they asked me, will you get certified? Yes. But that has to do with how I'm paid. I get paid through public funding, through a scheme to help private schools have more resources. And then that gives the public school district that pays me more headcount, so they get more state funding. That's all very complicated. But regardless, that's why we're talking about private schools. If you, you know, finish your PhD and you want to go and you feel really, you know, dedicated to becoming a teacher and want to get certified teacher, this online program isn't just for people that, it's very inexpensive and it's state certified. So there are a couple of them online and they're state certified, and you get a teacher that she's out of state, but we're like, I'm in a cohort of Michigan like educators, and then she's in Florida. We meet once a month and talk, and she signs off on all my assignments. And in 3 years, and then I have to take videos of myself teaching and send them in. And in 3 years, I'll be certified. And I took the 2 state exams. So, you know, if you're really dedicated to teaching and you want to work with kids and stuff, and you always told, like, I was someone that was always told, don't become a teacher. Don't be like, you will be bored. You won't like it. And now I see myself more as a librarian, more as an educator, right? Like, I still don't necessarily see myself as a teacher. I see myself as a librarian, but being a librarian in elementary school means that I have to teach classes. And that is something that I've come around to more as the year has progressed. But I just think that it's important for people who are looking for jobs or who are looking for new opportunities. And like you've said this, and I've said this, and people we've had on the podcast, you never know what's going to happen, who you're going to meet that's going to give you a resource or support you, how you're going to find a job. You just don't know. You just kind of have to be open. And like both of us took lots of opportunities to like, you know, get to know people and be like genuinely friendly. I'm not talking about like using people, but like genuinely get to know people who were, you know, who later was like, oh, here, apply to this. I saw this job, or I saw this thing, or, and like, are good people. And like, we also took opportunities to do fellowships and different things like that. That's invaluable.
Yeah. And I think it's like what Ray said earlier, in like, I always put it in the context of a Cinderella story, a cinematic masterpiece starring Hilary Duff. But
I met her once.
What?
Yeah, I went this, we'll do a sidetrack, this, and then Allie can say her piece. This woman my mom knew always entered those like radio contests, and like she won, and the prize was Hilary Duff tickets, and the woman like didn't have like a little girl to take. And so the woman like took me, and we got to like meet Hilary Duff, and I got like a picture with Hilary Duff. And I was not like a Hilary Duff like uber fan. Like, I liked her TV show and her movies, but it wasn't like I was like head over heels for Hilary Duff. But yeah.
She said she was tired of being Lizzie McGuire a while ago. And I was like, you stop that. You stop yeah. that right now. Just yeah. the way I feel about Daniel Radcliffe. He's yeah. like, I'm tired of, I'm like, you stop that. Like,
right. Embrace sit, that you were an icon.
Just sit on that pile of money you made and, you know, ask Emma Watson how she broke out of being Hermione.
Yeah.
And then get back to me. But like, you know, back to what I was going to say is like, never let the fear of striking out keep you from playing the game. And it's like that thing is, it's just like, you know, when I applied for that internship and that I got for CNN, you know, the reason I applied for it was actually my one friend who I was working with was like, did you see that CNN internship? Isn't that ridiculous? Like, they're going to pick someone from here. And then, you know, I applied for it because I was like, why not? And then, yeah. and then it ended up, I interviewed with like the two different teams in the library, and then they picked me. And then I was down there for like 4 months, and then they asked me to stay on. So then I ended up being there for like a year in total. But it's like,
yeah.
you never know what is going to be the thing. And then it was really like that experience. And like my job that I have now was like that too, is I was like, oh, I'm just going to apply to this and see what happens.
Yeah.
And I got that job. And I think that, you know, like Ray said with her job, she wasn't looking. And like me with my job, it was just something I didn't let slip by me. Those are the sort of opportunities you need to take. And sometimes I feel like we're so busy thinking about our dream job or where we want to be that we're missing these opportunities that are coming in front of us. And it's like, you don't have to stay somewhere for 30 years.
Right.
You can take something, be there for a year, be there for 3 years, be there for 5 years. And if there's not room for you to grow, or you're not being challenged, or you don't like it, or you're miserable, leave. Like, you're not legally obligated at all to stay somewhere you're unhappy at.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And I think that, especially, I think our generation's more likely to leave than previous generations for a myriad of factors, such as in like, there isn't as much stability in jobs, there isn't as much guarantees of like, you'll have your job, you know, at the same company, or you can move up in the same company for over 20 years, that kind of stuff. But also, I think that, yeah, we are less married to like the, you know, 2.5 kids and house and dog situation. We have more debt than ever before. So like the need for like change of pace or finding affordable living means that you have to be willing to move places, and all sorts of factors go into it. But yeah, I mean, I've always been one too, like, I plan, like, I didn't just like, sometimes I joke that I just applied to grad school because I got drunk and had dinner with Marissa in Cleveland, Ohio, and was like, I'm applying to grad school, which is kind of how it came about. But, you know, it was something I'd always wanted. But I think like, it's really good to have a plan and to like have goals in life. But I also think it's good to be flexible, and like, things are going to roll into your life and happen, and they're going to tip everything upside down. And if you're not able to roll with the punches, like if you lose a job and you're not able to like say, okay, right now I have to do this, but I'm going to work towards this thing, then you're not going to, you are going to be like beaten down. Whereas if you can like, yes, you are welcome to be upset about things that happen to you, of course. And you can cry and you can be upset and you can, you know, be mad, but you have to be able to say, okay, well, I'm going to do this thing because I have to survive, but I'm going to keep working. And how can I make it this thing into a, like a thing on my resume that says, look how resilient I am or whatever.
Yeah. And I think that now is the really good time for that is like, you know, I think we all know that when the pandemic first broke out and it was, everything was shut down right away. I mean, do you know, I think it was the Transit Museum in New York. One of the museums, it might've been the Tenement Museum, but one of the museums in New York, like right away laid off a lot of their education staff.
Yeah.
Which was terrifying. And then, you know, one of my friends immediately got laid off from her job. And then I ended up getting laid off in October. And that was like sort of the thing, is it was just like back to back to back to back. And it's, but it's also knowing you're going to be able to find something else. So like my friend who got laid off in like May, she found something by like July. You know, I like was already doing like something on the side. And then I found like another couple of things on the side. So it was like fine. But I think that putting, you know, your resume will highlight that. And I don't think any employer out there is going to be like, oh, look at that like gap. Or like, look at, she worked at Target for like 8 months. They're going to be like, oh, look at her, like still going, still working on things and like still working towards these things, because skills you learn at Target are applicable archive skills. Every skill you learn is something that's applicable as long as you're using it right. And you're actually right. Trying to learn skills.
Yeah, for sure. I use all sorts of skills every day at school. I use, you know, conflict resolution with the kids and, you know, library skills and all.
For your Aquatops knowledge helps you manage classrooms.
Oh yeah. 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 It's kind of crazy because, that job was not great for someone my age and like situation and like level of education. It was like not fun. It wasn't like phenomenal to be there, but I also like working with kids and like swimming and water, and I was like, all right, cool, this is great, that's, you know, for now. You have to know, you have to like have strength in yourself that you know you're not gonna get stuck in something like that forever. Like you have to know that it's going to have an end date, and maybe you don't know what that end date is, but you have to just kind of like make peace with it. And then, you know, just keep looking forward.
Yeah, definitely. What would you say you feel like was the most frustrating or like the hardest part of the job hunt?
I really found like the not hearing is always bad. Yeah. But also like the hearing all at once. And then you'd have like two interviews and you'd be like really up, like on a high, and you'd be really excited. And then you'd start overthinking like, well, which one do I, because you just want to be positive. So you think, well, which one do I take? And you didn't get offered either of them yet or at all. I mean, that was hard. And like, I'm such a sharer. So it'd be like, I would tell all these different people in different ways of like what was ever was going on, and everyone was being really supportive and stuff. But then you have to go through the process of like telling all those people again, oh, I didn't get that. I didn't get that. And like, again, I didn't have people in my life that were judging me negatively for that. Everyone was very supportive and helpful and sending me links and all that kind of stuff. But it was still like a hard thing to go through and have to tell everyone, oh, I didn't get it. You know, and you have to like do it over and over, and like anything that bad that happens in your life and you have to tell multiple people is like, but like I get myself into that situation because I just tell everyone everything. So
I would definitely say the not hearing thing. And to me, I think the thing that's super, super frustrating, and like, yes, this is a criticism of HR people, and I don't know if this is your structure, but it's not right and it's not fair for you to do this to people. Like, I don't care. I mean, I still care. I think it's annoying. But like, if I never hear from you at all, like, not even like beyond the automated system's receipt of my email, like of my application, then that's fine because I know that I just wasn't one of the people. But my side to that is that if I had to spend a half hour of my time copying and pasting all of my crap into your digital system and the digital system cannot auto-generate a rejection note to everybody, you need to get a different system because there are those that do it. So,
yeah,
you know, but like if you interview somebody, you need to like, even if it's just the introductory phone interview, if you never contact them again, that is so rude.
Yeah,
and it's just like ridiculous because I interviewed for a job twice and never heard anything from them.
You had
and
that happened interviews?
Yes,
that's crazy.
And that happened to a friend of ours too, where she interviewed twice and then she never heard anything. And it's like at that point you need to like, this is like such a HR thing that it's like, why? Like, why did you just do that?
Even if you just like had a form on your computer or in your Google Docs that you just copy and pasted and like hopefully maybe you could change that, like put the name in of the person, but even if it said dear applicant, copy and paste it and send the email. That takes like 10 seconds of someone's day. And like the people we know who we look up to and respect of like of people in their field and their job and whatever, do everyone's busy. I get that. But like the people that I really know, if they were in that position, they would find the 10 seconds in their day to do that, regardless of how quote unquote busy they are. Like there's no, like I can't leave stuff. Even when I always send a thank you, even if it's just the word thank you at work or whatever, for whatever email situation's gone. They could probably don't care whether I thank them or not, but I can't leave that like hanging. If someone, like I asked my HR person a question recently and then she's like, oh, I took care of it. Did I have to like respond? Like she took care of it. Fine. But I still emailed her back in 10 seconds being like, thank you very much for your support and help.
Yeah, it is kind of ridiculous. And like, I'm trying to think, I feel pretty sure that there was at least more than one where I had, where I had interviewed at least once and then never heard anything again. And it's like,
if you talk to a physical person, you should get some type of email rejection.
And I get that you're inundated with like applicants, but this is just like a courtesy thing.
Yeah.
Because like we were just saying, you can auto populate, like there's a mail merge you can do. Frankly, you could BCC all of us and we wouldn't care because at least we'd all know for a fact that you didn't pick us. Like, I don't need it to say, dear Alexandria Penn, put dear applicant BCC me on it and call it a day. If I've talked to you twice, you probably should write me a letter that says, dear Allie, like we would or somebody else. But it's just like, it's such a lack of courtesy that it's like, well, I guess I didn't want to work here anyway because this is ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. So. No, I agree.
Okay. What advice would you give people who are job hunting or thinking about job hunting? Or
I feel like I've said this before, but you need to have more than one resume. Like you just have to have, because most likely you have let's say you have a degree in history, right? There's all sorts of types of jobs, whether it's a museum, a library, an archive, a university, right? All of those things have different factors for what they're looking for. So you should have, and again, you can still edit it for each individual job, but you should probably have like a museum resume. It still might have the same exact things on it, but you just might want to put them in a different order. Like look at online what resumes to museum jobs look like and mimic that. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you can put your own flair. I don't know. Yeah, it just depends on the type of job you're looking for. So yeah, have a couple resumes that you have like labeled on your computer, like museum job resume, library job resume, you know, engineering job resume, whatever your field is, whatever your background is. And then you know, for, and then go through it for each job and then make sure you save it as like a PDF with the name of the place or, and your first and last name or whatever their requirement is. And then you're probably still going to have to type in a bunch of stuff into the, like, they still want you to upload a resume, but then they, you still have to type everything in. It's a long process, but yeah, just have, I had like probably, I have like one document that has like everything listed, like even since high school. I have a couple documents that, you know, I save old resumes, especially if there was a resume that like I really liked. And then I also save cover letters and like, you know, there's different styles of cover letter. There's like the Disney letter that tells a story. And like, depending on the place you're applying to, that could be the right type of letter. You can look up all sorts of letters, but yeah, if you have one where you got an interview, even if you didn't get the job, and you like that letter, like use that as your template, you know, you finally, I mean, and then just make it for that university or that place that you're applying to. But yeah, always have more than one resume you're like tweaking and working with. Keep your resume up to date too, as you're working. Like, I was just thinking about that. Like this summer, I should like make a new resume and make sure at the top it has my new job, because I'm not looking to go anywhere anytime soon. But when I do, I don't want to forget all the things I've done in the last years, couple years.
But I don't want to.
Yeah, I know. And I think for people in academia, that's really important, because you don't want to like miss out that you won some departmental award or that you did some fellowship or you published some paper or small article or were interviewed or whatever. All that stuff has to be on there for academic purposes, I think, more so.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think I have like an award I need to put on my resume that I haven't put on my resume. And I need to put on a, like, this new job. And, like, I need to sit down and write down all the skills I've learned and gained and stuff.
I know I have a lot of that stuff. Like, I need to update my website. I need to update my CV. I need to update my resume. I need to edit my LinkedIn. And I'm just like, I don't want to do any of this crap.
Yeah. I do keep my LinkedIn pretty up to date. Just because I know that's a quick way that people, like, Google you and search you. So I keep that pretty up to date.
All right. I have a question. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to. But do you feel like, as someone who went through the archival program, has worked in archives, was like, I want this type of job, and then went out on the job hunt and sort of, I assume, faced the sort of disheartening archival interviewing and that sort of thing that I faced as well. Do you feel like disheartened? Do you feel like you, I don't want to say it like this, but I can't think of another way to say it. Like, without, this sounds really petty, but I don't mean it to sound petty. I just mean it to sound more like you're kind of like at a place where you've made peace, but that might not be the path you go down.
Yeah.
You're just kind of like, I'm done. Like, I'm just tired.
I do feel that way in some respects. However, I did like the work, and I feel like the internship I did in the archive. So I did one for like the humanities clinic that was not quite in the archive, but was kind of archival adjacent. And then I had my actual archival internship where I felt like I was really doing really like my first and only truly like archival experience, like hands-on experience. So I felt like I just got a taste of it, and that like, I want more, because I do still think that it's like an interesting job, but I do feel like I probably, as of right now, the only way I foresee myself working in an archive would probably, unfortunately, be like in the volunteer sense, because one, I don't think I could get a job without more experience. And it's really it's unfortunate that you can't get jobs in the archival field that pay well enough to live on, and they have so much need for volunteers, but there's not enough trained people. And so like, and I worked at a place that had a lone arranger. And so like, I feel like after the pandemic truly subsides, I I may reach out to her because I think she really needs the help and she really needs like trained people to come in and help her. And I'm fortunate enough to have a job where like I, you know, have summers and things. So I can foresee myself going back into the field in a way that like, in order to help someone and gain some more experience. But I think it's unfortunate problem within the field that like, that's almost the only way you can gain experience is by doing unpaid labor. And the only, and we seem to be a population of people that are willing to do that. And I don't think that that's fair because I'm a trained professional and the people we know are trained professionals. And it's not fair that I went to school and like really all I can really do to get more experience is to like have and be willing to use the time I have in my life to volunteer.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know,
or just never go back into an archive, like, you know, and just like, and just have this certificate. Like, you know, if I was working in an archive, see, like if I had a job in an archive, I could see becoming a CA, but I'm not going to like pursue that certification, certified archivist, unless I had a job in that field, which I don't at this point. So, and I think it's like not fair that there aren't ways of like paying people, even if it was just a minimum wage, like something that like I would be walking into a place and be like, yeah, I'll volunteer. It's like, I'm not at the end of, like, it's one thing, like, you know, you hear of people, I'll give an example. When I was a kid and I volunteered a lot with kids with special needs, we would do like a winter camp. And we had this woman who was a retired nurse and she would like volunteer during the week to help the kids that needed help, like going to the bathroom and different things like that. But she was like at the end of her career and was doing this out of the goodness of her heart because she had the training to, you know, do those things.
She wanted to,
but she was also like at the end of her career, right? And like she could have been there or not been there, and she'd already worked and had her pension and whatever in her life. She chose to use those skills to help people in a volunteer capacity. I find it like hard for people to be like, oh, you went to school, you're starting your career. Well, we're not going to pay you to do the work that you want to do. Or we're not going to pay you a living wage.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and to me, I think the frustrating thing was doing so many interviews and like talking to things and like people, I don't like that in the world of archives, there's this feeling that like corporate archives is somehow so different than university archives or public library archives. And it's like, what exactly do you do that you think is different than doing? Like, I genuinely just want the answer because I'm also building exhibits. I'm also processing archival collections. I'm also answering reference requests. Like, what do you think that we're doing that's so different? It's just the people you serve as the public and we serve the company.
Right. And even then, you probably still get questions from the public and different things coming in and working with people who might be writing a book or whatever. It's not like you're, I think that, I'm sure there are some corporate archives that function this way, and to a certain extent, but I would imagine that most people who are archivists still have that feeling of like information freedom and like that the companies, besides, again, some rare cases, for the most part are like, whatever's in their archive is probably like fairly accessible. Like it's not like there's like these like dark hooded people in like the basement with like blood rituals going on and like, you know what I mean? Like it's, I just think people hear the word corporate and are turned off by it. And I understand that reaction, but also just hearing what you did at your job when you did work for a corporate, it did not seem like this major barrier to people and like that you did things that like no one can see this. We're going to hide the, you know, whatever, these secrets or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like the 6 months of job hunting I did, and then like watching one of our friends do it, has left me very disappointed in archives and like just the job process and like the lack of transparency and all of that thing, all of that stuff, because it's like, I don't know. It's just an overall lack of transparency that I think I can say as two people who studied archives, wanted to do that, and now have jobs outside of archives.
Yeah.
It's very strange. And then now that you're on the outside, you're like, the heck was going on? Like,
I think you hit the nail on the head too, like the lack of transparency. When I had like interviews with like more, a lot of times it was universities and it was like library archive adjacent type things where you kind of worked across the fields. It's like not clear what they're looking for. And I would think that, and maybe it's more clear in corporate archives what they're looking like, because they come from a company perspective and like a, yeah, a prof, not, I'm not trying, I don't mean this way, but like a professional perspective as opposed to like a university institutional perspective, like a, that it, I just think that there's like, it's much more clear.
Yeah. So like, I think I know what you're saying is it's just like corporate archives want to verify that you have a set of skills. Whereas sometimes when you're interviewing for university archives and stuff, it feels more abstract. Like they're chasing this concept.
Yeah.
Of what you can do versus actual literal skills that you may or may not have.
Right.
And it's like, be more clear. What are you looking for? And I think that that's the thing is so many jobs are like that and so many things. And it's like, how can I do better at getting these if you're not being more transparent about what you're actually looking for?
Yeah. And I think too, at like, so I didn't work at a corporate archive. I worked at, but I did work at like a institutional organization archive. They're like a major nonprofit organization. So again, it was like, she was a lone ranger, but she was able to like see where my skill set was and like give me tasks, and then that helped her process things. And then I had like a collection that I processed from like start to finish. So I got to like to do the whole thing, including like the finding aid and stuff. But she was able to like see where I was, give me instructions, let me go do it, and then like check it. Whereas I feel like a corporate archive is also the same thing. They're like, okay, these are your skills. We're gonna like give you some instruction. We want to see that you can follow it. We're going to check your work real, you know, and then eventually we won't necessarily have to check all your work. And I feel like at universities, they've got, again, this like, they're actually like not as willing to teach. They like, they have these conceptual ideas of what the job looks like. And if you don't match those conceptual ideas and you maybe need a little like, you know, help to get to that next step of like competency, they're like, it seems like an oxymoron, but they seem to not be willing, or they're overtaxed themselves. So they feel like they don't have the time to like bring you up. Whereas like everyone who enters any job, you could be in the field. You could have been in the field for 10 years. Anytime you go to a new place, you're going to need that time to like be brought up to whatever requirements they have, standards they have, operating procedures that they have. And I feel like sometimes like the universities are asking you to step into something and like already know all of that. That was kind of like the vibe I got in some of my interviews, was they already expected me to like just be like savvy to everything.
Yeah, I definitely feel like, because I interviewed for a couple of university jobs too.
Yeah.
That like we were saying, it's like, yeah, like they want you, and I think that this just goes back to what we were already saying, is they want you to more fill these checklists, like these boxes of like possible things you can do. And it's just like, but what do you actually want me to do on a day-to-day basis? Like, and I think that that's something I always started asking in like job interviews, is what does a normal day for this job look like? Because I got so tired of this vagueness and like the, and it's just like, what does a normal day, I arrive at 8:30, 9 o'clock, what am I doing? Like,
yeah,
look, what am I doing? Because I can't tell from your 4-page job description about what you actually want someone to do. And I feel like that's another thing too, is on job descriptions, I don't need 2 pages of the institution's history. I will go to your website and read it. Trust me. Because I'm not lazy as like an interviewee. If I want your job that badly, I will go to your website and I will read your history.
Well, I think I think there's 2 things you said in that are really important. I want to make sure everyone hears is one, a good question to ask, because they're always going to ask you, do you have any questions for us? And I always get tripped up on that. So I think that's a really good question. What does a day-to-day look like is a phenomenal question to ask your interviewers. And the second thing that I think you touched on was, oh God, did I forget it already?
The vagueness of
descriptions. But also the key there was that do your research when you apply to a place. Now, do some when you first send your thing, but if you get a call or an email saying, let's set up a time to interview, then definitely sit down. We have the magic of the internet. Google, read their websites, read their blogs, read, you know, everything you can on the history, write up some notes about yourself that fits into any core values they list anywhere. You know, a lot of stuff asks about diversity training and diversity work and things like that. Have a mission statement in your life about those things. Have an idea of like work you've done on that. I actually, you know, just did something recently in my teaching program in our like monthly Zoom. We had a person, she works really far up north in a very minimal, like diverse area, but wants to diversify in her teaching and teach about subjects that these kids may have never been exposed to, but she's cautious about it. So I spoke up in the meeting about my experience working at a school. It's a private religious school. So, you know, 98% of the kids all have the same ethnic religious background and look the same, you know, the same and everything. And I said, I took that to mean, you have to remember these kids are going out into a world that has other people in it. And you have to, you know, in your, you know, mission statement as a teacher, realize you're preparing them for the world they're entering. That's different than the world their parents entered. And it's different than the world they're being raised in. So I had a big discussion in my teaching program about diversity. You have to be able to know where you stand and have ideas and thoughts about those things. And like you said, research the institution and see how anything you've done relates to whatever mission statement they have, whatever ideas they have. If there was a blog, you know, that an archivist did, you know, read it, that looks interesting and mention it in your interview, things like that. Like you said, don't be a lazy interviewee.
Yeah. And I think, you know, something to think about is, you know, I get asked the question about diversity all the time. Unfortunately, in a lot of my jobs, there hasn't really been a lot of diversity things, but that's the opportunity that you can bring in things outside of your past work experience, because in my volunteering, I've done a lot of stuff with diversity or my personal research project. And that's a good time to bring those things up because, frankly, I think if you're doing those things on your own time, that says more than if you've done it during your work time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure.
And then I think, you know, something else like Ray was saying is if you, granted, we've both been there where we've just applied to a lot of jobs because we felt the burn and we just needed to send our shit out there to the universe. But like, if you really like a job, I do this with every job, but sometimes there are a lot. If you really want a job and you're really interested in the job, save the description of that job so that you can find it later, so that you know if you're going into an interview and you can see it and it's fresh, because guess what? They'll take that stuff down. And then you're like trolling the internet the night before, like, where is this job description? And it's gone because they pulled it down.
That's a really good tip too, for sure. Yeah, I was always like printing. I still like a lot of paper for myself. I still highlight things. Like I'll type notes. I remember typing notes up about myself for different interviews and then printing them out and then highlighting certain things that I made sure I touched on. Like because I think for a long time, people are, especially if you're applying for jobs out of state, you know, they're going to be doing them online. People are much more comfortable online. They're not going to ask you to fly out for an interview for like probably ever, maybe ever again, necessarily, unless they really want like that second or third interview. So, you know, don't rely on your technology to like, I think print out any notes you have and stuff. Like they know you're looking at stuff. Cause like if you went in for an interview, I've gone in for an interview. I always bring an extra resume with me to refer to and stuff. Like it just shows that you're taking it seriously. It's not a weakness to have paperwork with you and things. And you just kind of have to, you have to kind of tell yourself that, I think, cause I think we see things online or on the news or TV shows and stuff and think, oh, I have to look like that. But you just kind of have to accept who you are. And like, I'm someone that goes into every meeting with a piece of paper and a pen and pencil. Yeah, of course I can take notes on a computer and I'll probably type them up later, but that's just me. And you just kind of have to be like, this is who I am. This is how I'm going to function. This is me at my best.
Yeah. And I mean, I definitely think I take notes in every interview.
Yeah.
And I think that that's good advice because especially if it's like a multiple interview type scenario,
yeah,
you're going to get hints in the first interview about what they really want. And I say this comment all the time, and I really hope my new boss doesn't listen to this podcast, but like we interviewed one-on-one together. And then when I interviewed with the team, I knew she was like rooting for me because she kept pushing me to say things that she and I had talked about in our one-on-one interview when I was in the interview with the panel.
Oh, that's nice.
It was so nice because then it's like, she's like, this is why we interviewed her. This is why I liked her. Like, these are these things. And I think that you're not always going to get a nice interviewer like that. And so you have to do the homework yourself. And so take detailed notes and bring those into your second interview because those are the things you want to underline in the second one.
Yeah, no, that's really good. That's really good advice. Well, should we say what our normal questions at the end? Anything else we want to add for this podcast back together?
I don't think so, but if anyone has any questions they want to ask us about job interviews and stuff, just tweet us and we'll either record it in a future episode or answer it on Twitter if it's short.
Yeah, for sure.
We're happy to help.
Oh, yeah.
What you reading?
What am I reading? I finished Ready Player One or Ready Player Two a couple weeks ago, and I have not picked up a book since because it's the end of the school year and I'm really stressed about getting all the books back. And like, I know I've been struggling with reading, having like a full-time job where like I read to the kids a lot and things like that. And so like when I come home, I just am like not picking up books and it makes me feel bad. But also I will also say I joined Book of the Month Club. And so I get like really phenomenal books like sent to me like one a month minimum. And sometimes I'll like add another one for like an extra fee. And so I have a ton of like phenomenal books and they're like all too good for me to choose which one to read.
Make Marissa pick it for you.
Yeah, I might do that because they are all like award winners. Like to be Book of the Month, if to be included in that is like a really high honor for like an author.
Read The Midnight Library.
I know it's on my bedstand. I just picked it up the other night telling myself I need to read this book. And then I put it on my nightstand and I have not picked it up. I've got like a section on my bookshelf that has like four or five books that are all, cause I love books about books. So I've got like four or five books like that. I've got some of these Book of the Month Club books and they're all different genres. I've got like all of Octavia Butler's books. I've read some of them, but they're all sitting on my bookshelf right now. I'm not a good reader. I'm not a good advocate right now about it. It's really bad. How about you? I know you read like no one I've ever, I mean, maybe the only person that reads more, possibly more than you or as much as you is Marissa. And she didn't when she was in law school. So you're like a whole other fiend reading as much as you do in grad school and working.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna end up going down because I have to start freaking dying from the comp exam.
Yeah.
Let me just say, I think it's outdated and I'm going to die on that hill. But anyway, I read The Selection by Keir Cass, and I have the next two on hold at the library because it was soups good.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it.
Yeah. Those are on the bookshelf at the school library.
They're good.
Yeah. Another book I really want to, I have two books. Again, these are all great books. There was one called, People We Meet on Vacation.
Oh, I saw that one.
Yeah, it was a book of the month, and I picked that one up. And then another one is called Cool for the Summer, and it's like a Grease vibe, but it's a girl, and she has like this like great time with this girl over the summer, and then she goes back to school, and then now she's like with the boy of her dreams, and it's like the tagline is like, should she go with the girl of her heart or the boy of her dreams? And so it's a little like bisexual love triangle, because the girl ends up at her high school, and so now she doesn't know. And like, it, because I'm like working at a Jewish school, I'm always like hearing and looking at all like much more Jewish stuff, and so it's cute because one of the characters is Jewish, and so I get to put the LGBT flag spine label, because I did buy one for the school and one for myself, and the Jewish star label on the like spine for the school. For, oh yeah, I'm really working hard to diversify my school library. And sometimes people ask me like, oh, who do you ask about like when you buy books? And I said, I don't ask permission from anyone about, there is no one else who's more of an expert. If teachers want books, I'm happy to buy like books for the collection that they feel should be in there. And they often know really great books, and I'm happy to take their suggestions, but I don't have to run anything by anyone. So fine. Yeah. And they were like, we had like a thing at our school about LGBT and like working on like making a more inclusive classroom and using like different pronouns and everything. And we had like an in-service with a teacher from the public schools who was like a teacher of the year and stuff. And I was just like, after we had that in-service, I was like, I'm going to buy a pride flag, like spine labels, like stickers. And I showed someone and they're like, that's really great. They're like, did you have to ask like anyone? And I said, I didn't. And they were like, cool, that's great. And then I had a meeting with our director, and he goes, how's the library going? You know, whatever. And he's like, are we diversifying the collection? I said, oh yeah, I've got a lot more books with like people of color. And like, and he's like, in the LGBT. I said, oh yeah, don't worry, I'm ahead of you on that. That's like standard practice for libraries. Like, so I'm so happy. I have a lot to do this summer with the library though.
Yeah. Do you get paid to work all summer, or is that sort of
my
like
paychecks go through the summer? You know, I could not go in and I would still receive the paychecks, right? But I won't go in for like 8-hour days. I'll go in
like a half day or whatever.
Yeah, and like do some stuff here and there.
Yeah.
So okay, TV shows. Have you been watching anything lately?
Yeah, but I'm not sure I want to admit to it.
Okay.
I watched the Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Me too.
And that was super good.
That was really good. I really enjoyed it. I binge watched Shrill the day it came out, season 3, and loved it. And now I'm like rewatching it with my mom and enjoying that process. She loves it, so it's good. And then I started this show. It like just came to Netflix. It has 3 seasons, called Startup. And it's like, it takes place in Miami, and it's about a crooked federal agent. And then there's like a Bitcoin thing, and there's some mobs, gangster type stuff. And the whole time I was like, this takes place in Miami. It's about dubious like criminality. I was like, it just makes me want to watch Burn Notice. And I love Burn Notice so much. And so I switched from Netflix over to Hulu, and I was like, Burn Notice.
Like, I don't think this was their intention, but I'm going to roll with
it. Yeah. I was like, that takes place in Miami. It's about criminals, and it's got Jeffrey Donovan, who's really hot. So I'm going to watch Burn Notice instead.
Frankly, I'll own it. I've been watching Big Time Rush, and I don't feel bad about it.
That's great. That doesn't surprise me about you at all.
Well, I watched it when I was like, when it was first airing, and then when it hit Netflix, I was like, I don't think I know how this played out. Let me just find out really quick.
Hilarious.
But yeah.
That's funny.
We'll be watching WandaVision soon, but.
Oh yeah. I saw WandaVision.
Don't spoil.
I am not spoiling. It's really great.
Yeah, I heard that. Like, and so like we watched like the first episode or the first two episodes of Captain the Winter Soldier, and Nolan was like, meh. And then I was like, I'm here for it. Sebastian stands right there. And but then it got so good. And then he was mad at me because I figured out the ending. And sure. I was like, it was so obvious. And he was yeah. like, but I thought they weren't gonna do it because it was that obvious. And I was like,
it's a comic book show.
Come on. Come yeah. on. Come on. not like, you know, but like who was the new bad guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm trying to talk about it without giving away spoilers.
Yeah, no, I understand.
But it's super good. Everyone should watch it. Another TV show. If you never watched Peaky Blinders, you should watch Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, we talked about that and I need
love to Peaky it. Blinders.
Another show I'll recommend is Breeders. I think I've talked about it before because it's like
you're not going to recommend Succession since you know I'm going to start watching it.
Well, Succession is a high recommend. Yeah, but if you want, yeah, Breeders is really good. It's just about this like British family couple and just like about their family tribulations and stuff. But it's got Martin Freeman in it, which is why I watched it originally, but it's really good. And then he's in Startup. He plays the crooked federal agent. And so that's why I started watching that. And then I was like, this show's not that good, but I still might go back to it.
It's okay. You will. You love Martin Freeman.
I do love Martin
Freeman. He's your boy, him and Benedict.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're both really good actors. They're both really different.
Are you ready for the Loki show? You're going to lose your mind.
I'm going to freaking lose my shit over that show. It's going to be so bad. I don't think I'm going to be able to handle it.
It's going to be fine.
I love him so much. And me and like millions of other women across the world. So like, it's nothing new, but have a wild fantasy that I will marry him one day.
You never know what's going to happen.
True. That's true. I'm so excited about Loki.
Me too.
It looks good.
I don't know what Owen Wilson's doing there, but we'll find out.
Yeah, he showed up and I was like,
interesting choice, but all right.
Yeah. God, I'm so excited about it. I'm just like smiling. I can't even handle it.
Comes
so
out next month.
I know. Anything else we need to cover for this episode back?
I don't think so.